Hey everyone, welcome back to the Retro Break podcast. We have another very exciting guest on this episode today. We have Robert Doman. So Robert, go ahead and introduce yourself to everyone.
Hi everyone, I'm Robert and I'm another YouTuber. I make tutorials about GB Studio games, but I'm trying to make GB Studio games specifically as my thing. So I'm trying to make the Switch, but GB Studio lets you make Game Boy games and Game Boy Color games. And
really exciting stuff. And you've actually made some really good games as well. I mean, I've played most of them and they are really impressive for Game Boy Studio. So we'll definitely be getting into that.
I think the quality of GB Studio games recently has gone through the roof. So yeah. I'm starting to compare myself with other people and I'm feeling a bit more self-conscious because I spend a lot of time making videos and I'm trying to get back into actually making games.
Yeah, it's a difficult balancing act.
It really is, yeah.
Firsthand. Yeah. But talking about making games, this would be a good place to start. So we were talking a little bit off the podcast just now, but we are actually both game dev graduates. Mm-hmm. So tell me a bit about your experience with that. It'd be interesting.
Yeah, obviously, I think in your degree, it was very different to mine, I think. You can tell me if I'm wrong. But from the very first day, they put us into teams and we are making games. Obviously, everybody at the beginning didn't know what was going on, and it was kind of fun trying to figure out what it means to be a game developer from the very first day. And obviously, everybody has their background in college and in secondary school from, I don't know, for example, me, I did graphics in college, so I was an artist, and other people did programming, so they were the programmers. And other people did writing or something, so they were writing and they were trying to come up with the story of the games. But yeah, from the very first day, we were all working in teams, and each year we would work on a large game, and then alongside those large games, we'd have projects. For example, I would be 3D modeling cars or whatever the specific thing we had to model was. For example, we had to recreate a house from League of Legends or something, which I wasn't interested in at all, so I wasn't very good at that. We were working in teams making games for 3 years. So comparing that to yours, I think you kind of were encouraged to make games, and it was all about game theory, it sounded like.
Yeah, mine was a lot more theory-based. It sounds really interesting that you were just thrust straight into it. You went straight into the deep end by the sounds of it.
Yeah, it was good though, because beforehand they told us to familiarize ourselves with Unity and they gave us, you know, some tutorials to follow. So hopefully, which wasn't true, obviously, everybody had, you know,
a bit of a level understanding.
Yeah. Yeah. Opened it up, made the rollerball tutorial, mm-hmm. and kind of familiarized themselves with what buttons to press in order to get things working.
Yeah, that rollerball tutorial, that's about as far as I got in Unity.
That's exactly how far I got as well before I came, but obviously we did have the lectures as well where we were learning about the theory. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes it was more valuable to think about how our own game worked and why certain games did, like, solved certain problems, you know?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So what was your sort of specialty then in the game-making sphere?
I was a 3D modeler, but by the end, I kind of wanted to be a designer, and I was... Mm. And even, like, the whole time, in first year, I made a game in Twine. Do you know what Twine is?
Yeah, I use Twine, the kind of like a visual novel
exactly,
system.
Yeah.
It's more just word-based, isn't it?
And so I had, to me, that was coding. Like, it was like typing in variable names and then, like, if this, then display this, and like random numbers to send you to different places. I kind of got into the programming. I was wanting to be a designer. Obviously, I was watching loads of videos online from, Extra Credits? Do you know that YouTube?
Yeah, I love Extra Credits. I was going to ask if there's any game dev YouTube channels that you enjoy, so that's one of them.
Yeah.
Any others?
Obviously, I watch... There's so many, like... what I love is finding new channels that have, like, a... They upload a video, and it's, like, their first year of game dev, and that's, like, the video. Mm-hmm. Those are really interesting to me, because they learn so much, don't they? Like, they...
Yeah, I love those.
Some of them are complete fails, and you feel sorry for them wasting their time, but if anything, they've grown from it, haven't they?
Yeah.
So obviously I watch like Let's Talk Game Design. That's another great channel.
Yep. He's a friend of mine, actually. I'm thinking about getting him on the podcast soon. Let's
that
see
would
if
be
we can
great,
do that.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's also another one, Level Designers Toolkit. Is that
Game Design. Game Maker's Toolkit.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
I was watching it last night, actually. I was watching his Game Jam videos.
Yeah, and he started making a magnet game. Yes. But what I love about him is that his videos now, they frustrate me because he clearly has a huge knowledge or hopefully a knowledge of theory of game design. But then making this new game, this magnet game he's working on, he's like, it's now about development. You know what I mean? It's actually, it's a completely different realm in a way. There are so many like simple errors that he's making that he's figuring out along the way, which is fantastic. But, you know, it's like, I'm seeing it happen. And like he,
you're seeing it from the
he
other
knows
side,
so
yeah.
much. It's, yeah. Yeah. It's like
I was
sad,
really in...
but also amazing.
I was really enjoying seeing his struggle in the first few episodes of that. He's like, I do not understand Unity at all. The tutorials don't make any sense.
Yeah, but then in the latest video,
he
came up with a process of like making puzzles, which I think was genius. Mm.
Yes, I actually wrote on there that it's genius. Having the keynote things and having that grid
exactly,
with the different items in there. Fantastic idea.
Yeah, I think everybody should steal that. That's a great development
everyone
tip,
will.
Right? Yeah, I'm glad that he's slowly... like becoming, you know, an actual developer rather than just a design theory expert that's never stepped beyond that line. And now his if he makes more of those old videos, it will actually be with the understanding of how it should be worked upon, I guess.
How it was actually made rather than just the theory behind it. Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. And it's a really good series as well. And I can kind of see why you like GB Studio as well, from what you just said about the art side of things mixed with kind of programming at a basic level. I think, GB Studio was probably the perfect choice
for you. Especially since, obviously, I found it during COVID, right? And I was finishing my degree as it happened, and I was finishing like a huge game project that we'd worked on for a year. And we were thrust home. We were thrown home, and we... had to finish it from from our bedrooms, right? So it was kind of sad to finish it like that. But then, obviously, I started looking for a pixel art program, and obviously that program, I tried to think about like, did I want to use Unity? You know, because I'd used it before, and I did pixel art in college, but then I found GB Studio, and the limitations actually helped me finish the game way quicker than if I was to do it in Unity, because Unity has so many options and things, like so many things that you can click on and find and things, and obviously you can make it 3D, make it 2D, you can make it sprite-based 3D, you can do anything, right? But GB Studio, it's a Game Boy game, has to look like a Game Boy game.
Yeah.
And back then there was no color mode, so it had to be a Game Boy game.
Interesting. Yeah, so you found it when it was in its first iteration.
Yeah, I found version 1.
Back in 2020, Yeah, which was, really, really basic compared to what it can do now.
Yeah, it's incredible now.
It is. The rate of improvement over the past few years in GB Studio is just blowing. Like, and the stuff that's coming out of it, too.
You should try and talk to a developer on it.
Yeah, and I'm trying to get some developers from other styles of programming as well, like GBDK well. I've been trying to mess around a bit in there, but, you know. Might be able to take some advice from someone. Yeah, but it's interesting that you decided to make Game Boy games because it seemed like a good way of making games rather than because you wanted to make a Game Boy game.
Exactly, yeah.
Which seems to be the way a lot of people came over to it. So do you have much of a background with the Game Boy, or was this purely from a game dev point of view?
Well, as a kid, I had a DS. And I had a friend who had a Game Boy. And all they had was this really bad, like, Tweety Pie game. it was like... you were Sylvester or something, you had to get Tweety Pie. It was awful. It was like a platforming game. There was no reason for it to exist. So I didn't really have a relationship with Game Boy specifically, but obviously during the pandemic, you kind of pick up these hobbies, don't you? Or didn't we, I guess. I ended up buying some Game Boys. I ended up buying some cartridges. I ended up getting into it that way. So it didn't start as a love for Game Boy finding itself, but it more turned into that after I got involved, which I kind of like that more, because Yeah, the DS arguably is a better system, but it's way harder to develop for.
Yeah, I mean, there are a few homebrew things for the DS, but yeah, there's not really a game engine like there is for the Game Boy. What games did you pick up then when you got your systems during lockdown? What did you actually play on it, apart from the Tweety Pie game?
Well, I'd never even looked for the Tweety Pie game again. I obviously got Tetris, I got Pokemon Red, I ended up getting Crystal.
Yeah.
I got Mario 6 Coins, whatever it's called. I looked for F1 race because I'm a big car fan. I can't actually drive, but I love cars. That's why I was 3D modeling cars in uni.
How did you feel about playing those games compared to the DS then? Was it kind of jarring to go back that far?
No, because I was making GB Studio games, I could appreciate the how amazing these games actually are. Because obviously in GB Studio back then, my first game was called A Western Ballad, and you're just a little sprite of a cowboy, which is my profile picture on YouTube. And then he just walks around and talks to people. And then there's I think the most exciting thing is there's tiny little animations of a gunfight. You know what I mean?
He walks around very slowly.
Very slowly. Yeah.
How did you come up with the idea for that one, man?
I think I like Western movies, and I probably had watched one beforehand. and I just took a very basic idea of a guy who's in jail, and he's in jail, but they can't prove that he did it, and therefore he gets let out, and then and what he did was steal some gold, and that's basically the story.
That's the entire story.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good first start. Was that your first project in GB Studio then?
Yeah.
Or had you made a few smaller games before that?
No, that was an extremely small game. And I think I saw that I had started it during the same time period as a game jam. And so I was like, oh my God, I should just try and finish it for this game jam, which I think was a week or more. Maybe 2 weeks. And it ended up there was only two people in the game jam, me and someone else, I think. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so it wasn't...
So did you get first or second?
I think I got first because, obviously, I didn't rate theirs very high because theirs was unfinished, I think. And luckily
the competition.
Yeah, luckily they voted mine high, so I came first, I think. it wasn't a very a good start of game jamming. Mm. All my other games after that were the next few games after that were properly from game jams, and I was trying to do good and but be part of this community of people making Game Boy games.
Do you feel like game jams help as well?
Yeah, game jams are so useful, especially if you have some knowledge about game making. They will basically give you that deadline, because it's extremely hard to basically give yourself that deadline, or for me anyway.
No, I agree. It is difficult.
Yeah. For example, the Game Maker's Toolkit guy, he said, I'm going to try and do this in a month. And then it turned out the month was over
3 months.
Yeah, it was over 3 months. I was just like, what? That's a cheat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he had to make videos in between, so you can let him off.
Yeah, maybe, but you would just cut those days out where you do that. And then all you do is have less days, and you know what I mean? You can't just stretch out the 30 days into infinity, otherwise it's just you don't have a deadline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess that is the thing with game jams. There is a hard
deadline. Very hard.
Because the judges need to rate them.
Exactly.
So you need to get them in, yeah.
Yeah, so that game jamming kind of taught me to finish the games. Because obviously in uni, when there's a deadline for the end of the year, we would always try and finish it a few months before to fix it. But that never happened. I feel like that never happened. We would always keep pushing it back.
That was the plan, right?
Exactly,
was the plan.
And we'd always make a development plan and a business plan, even though the business plan wasn't necessary. Obviously having that deadline is so important, and making small games is also really important because you get to see every step of game development from the idea, which obviously picking the right idea is half the battle, but then also knowing that you... if you're going to be working on your own, can actually pull it off. And then also getting that to the end and having to make the music, the art, the design, the testing, and then also the marketing and the publishing of it, putting it up, making the logo, making the banner, whatever you need to do to make it go live. It's basically a job, right?
There is so many different parts, different moving parts that you need to like connect everything in order to finish something.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Doing that on a small scale first is definitely a good idea.
Yeah, and then just slowly scaling up is probably the best way to do it. Or if you're going to make big games, make small games at the same time so that you can like not put all of your effort into one thing and then have it be that what's it called, where you spend so much money on something that it becomes like you don't want to give it up because
it's like sunken cost fallacy. Cost fallacy, that's it.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of thing comes into play if you make a big game. Like, you realize it's bad and that you either fix it, you keep going,
or you've wasted 2 years of your life.
Yeah. Or you quit it. Yeah. But like there's technically three options, right? Like, you keep going along the same path and it'd be a crap game. Sorry for swearing.
That's all right.
Yeah, I don't like swearing in my videos, so I'm sorry I did in yours.
It's fine. My podcast channel's not monetized anyway.
Oh, that's sad. That's bad.
Not yet. Okay. It will be after yours has gone live, obviously. You're going to push it over the edge.
Oh, well, let's hope.
Yeah.
So there's like just continuing it and it be the same game as you originally planned. The second option is to change it and spend a lot of time like testing, reviewing, getting feedback, and then changing it. Or you just quit and start something else. And obviously, two of those options, the sunk cost fallacy really hurts to do. And I've had that feeling working on my Take It Racing 2 game. I just looked at the upload for when I like announced like that I was even working on it, and it was almost exactly 2 years ago today. And in the last few months,
you're feeling the pressure with that.
Yeah, well, in the last few months, I basically restarted it because I realized, basically, I gave up on it for a few months before those few months, and in those few months, I realized that it was never going to be done the way I originally planned, and that's fine. You kind of have to accept that and then change your idea. And obviously, if you really like the game idea, then it's easy to kind of see what was wrong with it after stepping away from it and then coming back to it and fixing it. Understand now that it's not perfect still, but it's better than it was, and I can more easily finish it. So hopefully I'm going to finish it in the next few months and then move on to something else.
Do you have any tips for anyone who's struggling with being overwhelmed with so much to do? Have you got like a structure or a plan in place for when you are working on a big project to keep on track of everything?
Oh, like to keep on track of things, obviously having a whiteboard or a few whiteboards, like a notebook and a sketch pad and also a Trello board, which you can like move tasks across.
Yeah, Trello's good.
Yeah, like those things for keeping track of it. But if your project is too big, just cut something. There is always something you can remove from the game in order to finish
it. Save it for a sequel.
Exactly. I like to say that as well. Save it for a sequel, because if the game actually turns out good, then you'll have to make a sequel, right?
So, well, basically, technically, that is a sequel. Tell us a bit about Take It Racing 1.
Yeah, Take It Racing 1 was for a game jam. I made it in 1 week.
Yeah.
And it was a bad game by many people's standards, as I would expect. Because you have almost no choice when you like you choose your car is chosen for you, but then you choose the like, for example, the engine, what wings you like, the spoiler you have, what wheels you have, and what your frame of your F1 car is made out of. And then you press Take It Racing, and that's where I got the name of the game from, is the button.
It works.
Yep. And then you choose a track, and then you press Take It Racing again, and then using the stats of your car, it basically each lap is then
decides how well you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. It just calculates each lap and what position you have moved up or down into, and maybe even you crash or something. And then it ends the race, and you had no choice during the race. You just read the text, and then once you win every race in the class, you move on to the next class, and then once all the classes are done, you've won the game. And obviously, you upgrade your car by spending the money you win. But very simple game, made it in 1 week, almost no choice for the player. And so Take It Racing 2, I've now made it so there's sections of each lap, and each section you choose how you want to drive. And your stats are displayed alongside the section stats. And then you obviously make your choice, and then it sees whether or not the other races did better or worse than you, and your times are compared. and you move up or down. Obviously,
yeah, it's a really, really interesting idea for a racing game where you don't actually control the car.
Yeah, it's a pseudo racing game. I started calling it. I did call it a racing management game, but I realize it's more like a pseudo racing game.
It's like a choose your own racing adventure.
Yeah. So the reason why I actually I'm doing it like that is because I didn't think GB Studio like could make a proper racing game, but very recently I've seen somebody on Twitter. Or I think it's Twitter, maybe the Discord or something. I think it was actually in the Reddit. They posted a GIF of their game, and it's basically like V Rally or something. Like,
made in GB Studio. GB Studio.
Yeah, obviously it's not as impressive as V Rally, but the idea that the road is moving forward at like a perspective, and then your car moves left and right on the bottom. Like,
oh, sounds interesting. I'm trying to picture how they did that now. Like, yeah, you can get the car moving easily, but how would you get the track to move?
I think it was tile switching. But I found that tile switching is very heavy on the system.
It's quite slow, isn't it? It's quite slow, isn't it? Yeah, in GB Studio. So I don't know how they do that live.
Yeah, no. You can't do it every frame. Yeah,
that's what I was thinking.
I agree.
It doesn't look like a
slideshow.
It doesn't look like a slideshow, does it? It's actually like real time.
It looked good. Yeah. I played it.
That's really impressive. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm really impressed by what people do. And like the fact that I only see it like after somebody, it was like a reply to someone asking, is it possible to make a racing game?
Yeah. And they're like, yeah, of course it is.
Yeah. I was like, wait, what? Yeah. Because obviously I'm not a programmer. I'm an artist, right? So when people do these things, I'm like, oh my God. But obviously people come to me from my YouTube videos thinking that I am a programmer, which technically I am. I program things, but I wouldn't describe myself as that. Yeah.
Have you been tempted to look into programming more in depth, or are you happy with GB Studio for now?
I kind of come to the conclusion that I would want to work in bigger teams, right? And maybe it would be more valuable if I was a good artist and a designer, and they were a designer and a programmer, and we could work together, you know?
Play to your strengths. Makes sense.
Yeah, play to our strengths. And I don't really want to... Obviously, I'm really good at GB Studio with what I know. Yeah. Like, I'm quick. And if somebody asks, how do you do this? As long as it's not something crazy like that, I can say, this is how you do it quite quickly. I'm not that innovative when it comes to coming up with those crazy graphical programming.
I mean, you've done some interesting stuff. The two that I remember from the GB Jam, the Office Combat game, and what was the other one called? The dungeon crawling one where you play as a skeleton?
Dead Dungeon.
Dead Dungeon. Yeah. I really enjoyed that one. I was a judge on that GB Jam actually, and that was in my top list. So well done.
I didn't make Dead Dungeon to win. I made it as a tutorial series. I wasn't thinking about it being a good game. I was just trying to make a game that would be able to make tutorials about. And that's the kind of feeling I'm getting. Like if I maybe had focused on that as a actual game rather than a tutorial series, I probably would have done better. And I might even have like a finished product to sell on a cartridge and make some money, right? Because I make very little money from selling on itch.
Have you thought about doing a physical release of anything yet? Or you haven't really got anything big enough?
I haven't been able to justify. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Nothing is big enough to,
you know,
but obviously
release.
With Ticket Racing 2, I'm way more confident. And I have somebody who wants to put it on a Switch. Like they have a Game Boy game on Switch coming out, and then they want me to be on that too, which would be fantastic. And then someone else who
that's good. At least you're not rushing into it.
Wants to,
because you know it's guaranteed to be a good quality release.
I've said no until I have something good.
That's good. At least you're not rushing into it, because you know it's guaranteed to be a good quality release. Then, so you mentioned making tutorials and stuff. Do you want to talk a bit about YouTube and how you got started on that side?
Yeah, sure. So obviously it was about 2 and a bit years ago. Me and my brother both were unemployed. I think this is probably during the pandemic still. I guess nearing the end. And we both said to ourselves, let's do something together that is fun. Or let's challenge each other to make us do stuff. So we set up this new Year's resolution like spreadsheet.
I watched that video.
Yeah, that awful video.
I went back to the start of your channel and watched that. I was like, this is nothing like the rest of your videos.
No, exactly.
It was funny.
Yeah, it's kind of nice that it's there. And it's nice that...
I'm glad you did leave it there.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Well, in the terms and conditions of the spreadsheet thing, obviously one of the goals was to make a YouTube channel and upload weekly. Mm-hmm. And so it's really, when you don't know what you're doing, it's really hard to think of something to come up with to make a YouTube video about.
Even if you know what you're doing, it's hard. I struggle to keep a schedule.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, doing it from scratch must have been really challenging.
Yeah, so obviously you might have seen I played Risk with him. I obviously made the video about the New Year's resolution thing. I was 3D modeling a car, and just to have something to talk about, or just to have something to show. And then eventually I'd started talking about the Game Boy games. I don't know why I didn't do that instantly, but yeah.
You have to find your footing, don't you, I suppose? See what
works. And on that New Year's resolution thing, that was like the only thing we actually ended up doing, I feel like. Like on that, I said I had learned to drive or shave my head.
Wait, how much money do you owe in?
Well, we both. I think I ended up paying him like a couple hundred quid or something because of whatever happened. And obviously, through the time, there's like little challenges that like owe it into mystery gifts or something. Yeah, we tried to keep doing it each year, but now he's got a job and I'm doing this a bit more. It's harder to actually justify it. When we were both unemployed, it was
you had more time to play around and stuff.
Yeah, whoever's listening to this, if you have a friend who's unemployed and you're unemployed, challenge each other. Because that's the
and
only
make,
way.
Make the most of your free time as well. I mean,
exactly,
make a game.
Yeah.
Spend that time doing something you enjoy while you can.
Yeah, because you don't realize how valuable time is until... you don't have any of it.
yeah it is frustrating, so make the most of it if you're listening and you haven't got a job. Don't get one. So it's a scam.
It is a scam. Yeah, make money by selling games, but but don't quit your job if you do have a game.
If you've already got one, don't quit it. Yeah, damn, I was about to hand in my resignation.
Well, I remember in a previous podcast you were talking about how you make 200 quid a month from your videos. I make about 20 quid a month because I have 2,000 subs. You have 20,000 subs. So that kind of linearly.
You know what? When I hit 20, when I was originally thinking about that number years ago, I thought once I hit 20, that's it. I'll be able to go full time. I'll be able to quit my job. I'm going to have thousands every month. No, it's not like that. It's a lie. So you probably need about 200,000 to get anywhere on YouTube. So don't go into that expecting to make money.
Yeah, I think me and Jack, my brother, were expecting to make money, but we quickly... he got lucky. He made like a meme channel, and he made one video that went viral.
Yeah,
and all it is a meme, so it's really hard to like keep doing that.
Has he managed to keep that up, or was it just
from that one video? He made 100 quid, and then and then that was it. And he basically gave up because it dropped again.
Yeah, it is really, really difficult, especially if you do have a spike like that. It's like, how do you capitalize on that? How do you keep the audience that you've got? But maybe it's not even the audience that you want as well. I've had that in the past.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously with making tutorial videos, you know, the idea of not being the audience you want, what I would really want is people willing to buy my game, right? And, the reality is it's much easier to make videos to help people than it is to sell them something. And I really don't like selling people stuff. Like even in my video I just uploaded about that fact I made a Discord, I'm talking about my Patreon, and I'm talking about how like if you're a Patreon, I want to play your games and give you feedback, and that's like a reward on the tier. Yeah. But also I basically said that if you post your game in the Discord and you provide a feedback form, I might still play it anyway. I don't want to force you to buy the Patreon tier.
That's fair.
And the same idea of like, I could have sold Office Combat because that's a good game, but I didn't because I don't feel like it's only like maybe 10 minutes long. So I can't really justify selling that.
I suppose the good thing with Itch is that people have got an option if they want to support you.
You know, but generally people don't.
True, but you know, yeah. You might get one or two kind souls that really.
Yeah, I do,
it.
And I do get a few kind people that, and even people who leave tips, which is extremely nice. Yeah, I made like a vegan cookbook.
I saw that one. That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, and actually, like the few people have bought that. It's only $1, but they've tipped me as well. I was surprised when they buy that specifically and also tip me. It's nice.
Yeah, it looks like you've got some really good comments over there as well. People giving you like feedback on your games and stuff.
Yeah, I feel like the Itch community is very strong, and it's not actually connected to YouTube or Twitter or anything. It's literally just there's like a whole community on Itch, which you can tap into by just upload.
Yep. And that's the good thing about making lots of smaller games as well. You can build out your profile on there. And it is it's a great way of discovering games and following people and stuff. So yeah. If you're a game designer and you haven't got Itch, definitely go and sign up for that.
Yeah, definitely. I remember in university, it seemed like our lecturers were only just realizing it was a thing. Mm. And they started encouraging us to upload to it. Even though our final hand-in was like I think we put our game on a disc, you know, and we went to like the submissions office all as a team to sign the paper with this disc with our game on it. It's funny that like we'd be giving a disc to these people because, you know, physical distribution of modern games just basically isn't a thing. And especially as an indie team, it's very unheard of, isn't it?
I mean, most computers don't even have a way of reading a disc these days.
Yeah.
It's a bit strange. I guess it's just nice to hand something in, isn't it? You know, for your final assignment sort of thing.
Yeah, especially in all like standing there as a team signing the paper saying goodbye to each other because it's the last time.
Are you tempted to collaborate with anyone from uni on a game in the future? Anyone that you worked with in any of your teams? Or are you happy going solo for now?
I really like being solo. And I doubt I'll pick up Unreal again. But the problem with Unreal is it requires a decent PC. My PC is a laptop and it does run Unreal, but I wouldn't be confident finishing a game. I'm deep into GB Studio now where I actually love the community and I love making these small games. I love testing my games on a Game Boy. Yeah. Like this, it's just so special.
That's good. I was going to ask, do you actually play them on the system as well?
I almost exclusively play my own games on my Game Boy Advance, actually.
Yeah.
On my SP. Because it's a lit screen. I don't have a pocket. I should get a pocket.
Game Boy SP is the best one.
Yeah.
It's got everything you could need in a Game Boy, isn't it, really?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. So right now I'm testing Take It Racing 2 almost every day. And then whenever I... Obviously, I'm adding content and also then fixing bugs. And whenever I'm playing it, I have GB Studio open on my laptop, and then I find a bug, I fix it, or if it's quick, or write it down, and then I continue playing until I'm stuck or finished. So it's so valuable to have it. Like obviously when you're playing, when we were playing our games in uni, we'd press play and then we'd like test it in editor, or you can build it and test it. But it's not actually what the other person is going to play. They have a completely different PC, right? Mm. It's interesting because they could be experiencing different bugs with the size of the screen or the frame rate. It's interesting.
Yeah, at least with Game Boy, you know exactly how it's going to look.
Exactly.
Do you want to speak a bit about your most recent game, the Rosebud and the Bicycle, and how the feedback's going for that?
Yeah, that Rosebud and the Bicycle game is just... I wanted to make a game that I could sell to... There's this website that reached out to me and bought a Game Jam game before, and I thought to myself, that's fantastic. I should try and make a quick, easy game to sell to them again. And then, basically, I started making it and I thought to myself, no, I like this game. I don't want to just have it as a game to sell to these people. I think I want to make a full game like this. But then I started making it even more and I got that feedback, like you said, and I realized it wasn't actually that unique and my art style was just copying Pokemon and like the bicycle didn't really fit in with like the rest of the game. So I had that feeling of, I can either, you know, keep going and sink the cost even more. I can change it, which I probably will in the future, or I can stop. And I decided to stop. I put it on a shelf for now, and I've gone back to Take It Racing 2.
Okay, but it is there for you to carry on. I played it, and I really enjoyed what I played. Exactly, it seemed like a very relaxing kind of game where you're just sort of cycling around and visiting random people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tried to make it a game. Like, I actually made a game design document for that. Normally I don't do that because it's a very small game jam game. But for that one, I sat down and was like, what do I want this game to feel like? What do I want it to play like? And obviously, if anything, it's about learning process of using a game design document again. In uni, we did that. And obviously, when you're working in a team, it's much easier because everybody has their specific roles and you can all fill it in together. But then when you're working on your own, it's a completely different challenge.
And then you kind of feel like, is it worth making a document if there's only me going to say it? And it's all in my head anyway. But
it's actually extremely useful because if I now put it on the shelf, I can come back to it. Yeah, so I would definitely recommend it to anyone who is thinking about making a larger game is to write down everything so that you can come back to it when you inevitably step away from it for any reason.
Yeah, and you won't get overwhelmed then either. I had that happen with me when I was making a game in the past. But speaking to you today has made me want to go and make another game now.
I'm very, very glad. Yeah.
It really has.
Yeah,
I'm just going to find the time for it somehow.
Yeah, I was going to talk to you about your donut game. I watched your podcast series on that, and I find it quite sad that you kind of gave up on it. But I was so happy when you said that you actually ended up finishing it.
I did finish it, and now it kind of doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I'm guessing that's down to planning. I don't know when you began. I always think about the beginning of what the original plan was, because I'm sure that you probably was like, I'm going to make a game, I'm going to enjoy making it. And then by the end, you were like, I want to sell this game. And so therefore, you've got the flip, right? You may have switched what your intentions were.
Yeah, it was a weird one. So my intentions originally were just to spend a few weeks getting used to this game engine that I'd found called Stencil, which is kind of like GB Studio in a way, but
PC. Yeah, it's coming back to me now, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I was using this program called Stencil, and I thought, I'll spend a week or two and make this little game about a donut rolling around. 2 years later, I was still building it, and it ballooned into this massive 8-world adventure, and I'd done a Kickstarter, and I thought, yeah, this is going to be awesome. So I released it on the store. No one bought it. It got buried under a list of releases in about a day. It dropped to like number 500 or something. I made about £2 off it, and then... And then my computer crashed and I lost all the files.
Oh.
And then it got taken off the store because I didn't pay my Apple developer license or whatever.
Yeah.
And then when I got round to try and finish it off and make a PC version, Stencil's updated and all the physics have broken.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to fix it. So it's just sort of stuck there on the computer with no way of ever coming back to life at the minute.
That's extremely sad. And also, it kind of reminds... anyone listening, small games are better for single people, right?
Well, during that 2 years, I did make a game in about 2 weeks using Stencil, and I released that one, and I was actually really upset. It got way more downloads than Super Donuts did after 2 years, so yeah.
I think that's a lesson,
don't,
right?
Don't jump into making a big project.
Yeah, and especially don't quit your job because of it, right?
I didn't get that much on the Kickstarter.
Yeah, yeah.
I just got enough to pay for the pro version of Stencil, which is what I needed at the time. But Stencil's an interesting engine, but I probably wouldn't recommend learning it because it's kind of a dead end.
Yeah, from what I've seen, I think Godot seems like a great engine. And that would Godot's probably be the good. One I try out.
It's because... very overwhelming, though. It's even worse than Unity when you first boot it up. But once you get your head around it, apparently it's really good, especially for 2D games.
Mm.
Yeah, I'd recommend giving it a try.
I probably won't. I like GB Studio too much.
Yeah, if you've got some spare time and you want to mess around with something. And apparently it runs really, really well on low-end systems as well, so it should be fine for your laptop to run. But yeah, I did play around with Godot and Unity and stuff, but I never really made anything worth sharing. You know, maybe I'll go back to something in the future.
I definitely recommend it.
Yeah, whenever I've got time, apart from making YouTube videos, which takes up like 90% of whatever free time I've got.
Yeah, I've tried to make less. At one point I was making a video a week, and it was fine, but also it takes an entire day out of my schedule. And also messes up my thinking for making games.
Yeah, that was something I was going to ask you, actually. How did you sort of juggle the YouTube side of it and the game dev side? How did you balance that?
Well, I ended up just making my games for videos rather than making my games to be games, which obviously didn't help the games.
But you kind of had a script in your head as you were making them, so the video side was easier to create.
No, I never write a script. Normally, I have a topic of learning. For example, the bicycle game, it was how to make a bike mm-hmm. that you can get back on in GB Studio, how to make colors in GB Studio look good, how to do anything in GB Studio, just like specific aspects. Yep. And then I'll put those aspects together and make a game usually. Mm-hmm. That's what Dead Dungeon was. That it was a collection of game aspects put together into a series to make a game, and then the game happened to be.
I think the game turned out really well. Yeah, especially it felt very different to a lot of games in GB Studio at the time because it was more action focused. I think that gave it a bit of an advantage.
Exactly. Yeah, because a lot of people in my comments were asking for action based tutorials, so I did that.
And I guess, with the comments, you've kind of got an idea of what you can make a video on in the future then.
Exactly,
well.
Yeah. So, it worked. For a time, it was working very nicely until I kind of came to the conclusion that I don't want to be the GB Studio tutorial guy. I'm not that great of a programmer. Mm. I would prefer to be a game developer who makes GB Studio games and can provide insight after the fact, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose the good thing is with the tutorials, you're building up an audience at the same time.
Yeah.
Which then when you do release something of your own, people will be there to see it. So it's good marketing.
It is, but obviously most people will be there for the tutorials. They won't be there for my games. So it's like the...
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, life is difficult. You just kind of roll with the punches.
Yeah, you've got to do what works for you and you've got to build an audience at the same time. I'm struggling with that myself, honestly, on YouTube. Like, how many top 10 lists can I make? So, Robert, thank you so much for coming on the show. That's been really insightful. And I hope everyone listening had a great time as well and learned some new stuff.
Yeah, thank you, everybody, for watching. And if you'd like to support me, you can go check out my games on Itch. You can play Ticket Racing 2. Give me some feedback. And otherwise, you can make your own GB Studio games and look at my old tutorials. And thank you very much for watching.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Or listening.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Definitely check out his links. I'll put them in the description on the podcast and over on YouTube. So thank you so much and look forward to more guests coming soon.